Hey guys, welcome to the Reborn Podcast. This is actually our first episode where we have professional lighting, cameras. We've got a guy behind the scenes producing this for us. I'm really, really excited. And so for the first official produced episode, my guest is my lovely bride, Lacey.
Yes.
Hello. I'm so excited to have her here. You know, it felt like a low risk, like, hey, while we're testing out the space, testing out the new setup. But also, if I'm just being honest, you're one of the people that I respect and admire the most.
Oh, and
so I would love to kind of tell your story. I want you to tell your story, and then we can kind of tell how our stories came together.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to give people a lot of hope and encouragement. Yeah. That's the goal. Okay. So let's start here. Let's start with childhood. We were both raised in very similar backgrounds, which, by the way, just tidbit of advice, I think is a fantastic thing to look for when you're looking for a spouse. Just you were raised in similar environments and similar belief systems. So we're both doctor's kids, right? Yep. Your dad was a surgeon. My dad was an ER doctor. In fact, both of our moms are nurses.
That's right.
So very medical family.
Yes.
And both raised in the evangelical kind of Christian community, PCA churches. Both of us went to Broward Church. You guys went to a different church after that. We both kind of, our spiritual lives have evolved at similar rates and paces, very, very similar stories. So tell me a little bit about just kind of how you were raised and how that kind of built your grid before you got to college.
Okay. We are a family of five. I'm the middle child. And yeah, we grew up, we hopped around. We went to Briarwood, Covenant Presbyterian, always went to church, you know, and pretty much by the time growing up in elementary school, we started in fifth grade going to a Bible club after school once a week. And then in junior high, you're going to a youth group at every little local church. And there's Stampede or there's, what were the other ones called?
Lots of youth stuff.
Lots Details of youth don't stuff. Matter. Like there was constantly just something.
The church
that
was
we
a
could,
big, big part of your life.
Yeah. And lots of girl ministry time. Donna Green was a major influence on my life. She started this, you know, girls ministry in Mountain Brook. And, so yeah, that was kind of how we grew up. And then during the summer, I'd go to these Christian girl camps and I'd ask other girls there if they had Bible clubs like we did it back home. And honestly, a lot of them said they didn't. So I really realized what a gift of a community we had in Mountain Brook. Being around other young girls my age and also mentored by girls that were a little bit older. So that was, yeah.
Well, tell me, okay, so we've talked about this a ton, you know, over the years, I don't think we were ever directly taught this, but we both kind of caught a very similar mindset or dynamic that we believed, even if it was a subconscious belief, we believed that for how things work with us and God, mm-hmm. where you're kind of raised, hey, do good, get good.
Yeah.
Right? Like if I live a certain way, if I don't do the things I'm not supposed to do and I do the things I'm supposed to do,
right,
then I'm going to receive the life that I want or a pain-free or a less painful life.
Very true. Yeah.
You know, in return from God.
Yeah. So being raised, in that environment, I kind of thought that if I'm doing all these things right and being good here, being good there, having self-control here or whatever, that therefore everything else should be wonderful on the other side. And it should just, that's just how it works.
Yeah.
Well.
So without knowing it, you have these expectations built of what your life is going to look like. And
I don't know if it's being naive or what, but.
To me, I would almost use the word, I think I felt entitled.
Yeah.
Entitled is such a strong kind of aggressive word, but I do think there was some built-in entitlement. And it's like, hey, if I don't have sex before I get married, because that's what I was taught to do, then I have earned this perfect spouse and this amazing marriage is going to be fruitful and painless on the other side of it. Or I didn't party, or I did my quiet time every day, or fill in the blanks, because I did all of these things. Now God is going to give me in return the life that I really want, or the life that I dream about. So as it pertains to marriage, because that's where we're kind of going with this thing is, you know, Lacey's story is similar to mine, kind of her major trial in life was a marriage that ultimately fell apart. Mm-hmm. And so how did that tee up your expectations for marriage?
I thought that if I did all these things right as this Christian girl, you know, saving yourself from marriage and not being too crazy, you know, then I would, it's like, I assumed that the spouse would be the exact same, like it was just like a yin and a yang and it just goes together well. I eventually just kind of realized it really wasn't that way.
So let's talk about college. So when you were in college, tell me about kind of what was going on in your spiritual journey and then how that led up to meeting your ex-husband.
I don't know. Yeah. Went to college, went to Auburn, and it was also, you know, very Christian community, tight knit community there. And I worked at J.H. Ranch one summer, and you can tell the story of how we met, I guess.
No, you don't tell the story how you met. It's more like, give me the big picture. So, and I'll help you. So you're in this season of like just intense spiritual growth, right?
Yeah.
So you're really, you're learning to walk with God. You're learning to hear from God. And then you're expecting, you know, to receive something new from God. And then without going into the details, then you meet your ex-husband, right?
Yeah.
And it felt like this just serendipitous, just major God moment.
Yeah, I was in a very, very tight relationship with the Lord at the moment when I met my ex. It seemed like everything was aligning perfectly. And when I did meet him that night, it was kind of a love bomb, like it swept me off my feet. And I literally just thought, oh my goodness, I prayed these prayers before I came here and this is the answer. But I think that was almost manipulative in a way for me to think that one thing, him, was the answer to these prayers that I prayed before I came.
Like you're projecting your own desires, your expectations, like to make what you thought you were hearing from God. Like, this has got to be what I was hearing.
Because
you wanted it to be it.
And it was just, it was a magical night. I mean, it was.
Which is not to say it wasn't God, by the way.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right, true.
Just because things didn't work out doesn't mean God wasn't involved in all of that. I think it's a good thing to clarify.
100%.
We talk about that a lot.
So I met him and it was a 24-hour just blur of an event of magical. It was just, again, a love bomb thing. And I just kind of came back to Auburn and I was like, I mean, y'all have no idea what just happened.
You met this older guy.
Yeah.
He's a chef.
Yeah.
You love food, by the way.
I do love food.
So this man speaks your love language fluently and just showered you with food and affection and flattery and
my friends.
He meant it. I mean, he was very, very into you. So all of that was an authentic experience. But you're a sophomore in college?
Mm-hmm.
So you come back and you've got this older guy. He's a few years older. He's already graduated and that is now pursuing you in a way that you've never seen one of your friends be pursued.
Yes.
So talk a little bit about that. Not tons of detail, but just the weight of it.
Yeah. I mean, it was just like kind of what every girl would hope and desire, to the point where I was like, I can't say no to this guy. I mean, who would say no to dating this person when they're sending flowers every other week or taking you here or going to Atlanta to dinner? You know, he just swept me off my feet and I just absorbed all of it. It was, it's amazing at the time.
So you say this often, you say you didn't feel like saying no was an option.
Exactly.
Which I look back, was not an option.
Yeah. But I look back now and I'm like, that's pretty messed up.
Well, that's a little hard on yourself.
I know,
but I see what you're saying. There may be just a little bit of dysfunction behind, like not thinking for yourself or evaluating all factors involved.
Well, there's just other facts around life versus just all the hearts and the bubbles, and the infatuation is like a thing. And it's, you know, you still can make, just because there's infatuation doesn't mean you just have to keep saying yes, you know.
Right.
You know, there's also some other wisdom you can.
But you also don't know what you don't know.
And you don't know what you don't know. And I was so young. Yeah.
21 years old, maybe 20.
20.
So a baby.
Yeah.
And I meet a 20-year-old now, I think, oh my goodness. Yeah. Like I was making major life decisions at that age.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're really just a child in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So
we met, and then ultimately that summer, I was planning on studying abroad that summer in Florence, Italy. And turns out he was able to go too, and he got some culinary degrees.
So he basically followed you to Italy, mm-hmm. lined up a culinary school experience for himself. Mm-hmm. So now you're in the most, you always talk about it, it's like the most magical summer of your entire life.
Yeah, that whole year, because I met him in January, and it was just the whole entire first year of us dating and getting to know each other, and then going to Italy. And I was there for 2 months and took art classes out there and cooking and wine tasting. And it was just the most, and we traveled everywhere. It was truly the most magical year. I remember looking up being like, okay, God, this is going to be a really hard year to top.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how, because I ultimately knew we were going to get married at a very early, quick, you know, early on. And so that progressed. And again, before meeting him again, I was so spiritual. I just felt so tight with the Lord. So just everything seemed right.
Yeah.
It all just fell into place, and it was beyond anything I could ever imagine. I just felt like the Father was just doting me, you know, here with all of these things.
And then you got to be really close with his family.
Yes.
And then his mother quickly became a spiritual mentor to you.
Yes.
She is a really wise woman mm-hmm. of God. And so she started coming to Auburn, right?
Yeah.
Leading a Bible study.
So, yeah. And she came to Auburn and would do this Bible study on every Monday nights. And he would drive down. And she kind of exposed me more to like the more charismatic world and learning to listen to the Lord in new ways. And I don't know how to hear his voice. And I don't know, the baptism of the Holy Spirit. Just, there were so many new things that my eyes were just open up to. And as a creative, it came very easy for me to absorb and learn. And I would, you know,
you were a sponge.
I was just, I just took it all in. And, there was.
So I'm feeling the momentum. There's so much momentum. It's like this love bomb of a spring that transitions into Italy, this fantasy summer in Italy,
mm-hmm.
and then you're back at school, and then you've got this family you're falling in love with. And I remember you telling me, like, you go down to their farm, and you're literally riding horses bareback into a pond, swimming on the horse.
It's like the Notebook. It's like everything kept being like, what?
No, and it was all real. I mean, this is all part of your life. So I'm not mocking the experience at all. I'm saying, you had this, the momentum is unmistakable.
Yeah.
So, and then his mother's mentoring you, and you're growing in your walk with God, and you're hearing God's voice. And so tell me, when you talk about hearing God's voice, tell me probably your most significant or favorite story about what that was like during that season.
I mean, dreams were like a whole new world for me. Well, there's one particular day that I remember being in my dorm room alone, and I had my headphones in, you know, in my ears, listening to some worship music. And I just was just praying to the Lord. And I just said, Lord, I guess I was looking for some kind of vision or whatnot. And, I don't know, in my mind's eye, I saw a feather, and I said, okay, God, I don't know what that means, but I'm just going to say, I see that, and I'm going to go with that. And Lord, you know, thank you, Lord. And so I stood up and took the headphones out of my ear, and in the mirror, there is on my forehead.
So you look in the mirror.
I look in the mirror, and there was a feather on my forehead.
There's a feather, an actual feather.
And it just started falling to the ground. And my heart just like stopped. It was really a moment for me of just like, whoa. Yeah. Like, and I know that that some people might be like, that's just absolutely crazy or
no,
whatever. It's beautiful. But for me, it was my story and it was me yeah. trying to just.
And no one can downplay no one can what downplay. You experienced yeah, in that moment.
It was my little intimate moment with the Lord and my request and my vision, you know, and it's, that was, so I just was like, whoa. So ever since, every time I see a feather or saw a feather over the next couple of years, I just was
it
like.
It became a thing. Kept, every time you saw a feather yeah. in any shape or form, it reminded you of that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And you would what?
When I would
you
just said, be like, thank you, Lord, that you're here with me. Yeah. You know, like. It was just, I just knew his presence was with me. And I could have been happy or I could have been sad or I could have been
yeah.
angry. You know, it could have been anything. Yeah. But I knew it was my little, it was just like my little thing with the Lord of, okay, I see you and you're here.
Yeah. Wow. Let's see. Okay. I love that story. So fast forward, you graduate, you get married. Mm-hmm. And
I graduated like right out of college.
Right at
like May 20th.
Yeah. You got married right after graduating.
Yeah.
So like as fast as humanly possible,
mm-hmm.
you'll start your life as a newlywed. Life starts happening, right? So yep. at what point did you realize that something was wrong or off?
Goodness. Well, it wasn't until I was pregnant. After I had Ford, my oldest.
Well, before Ford, let me ask you this. I've heard you use the word, you think things were just always chaotic.
Yeah, yeah.
Even before kids.
Yeah.
There was this chaos and I feel like you realized you had you have a high tolerance for chaos. Like yeah. you could handle kind of yeah. the chaos. And he had a crazy job. He's a chef. Yeah. You understood it's late nights, crazy yeah. hours. You bought into an unorthodox yeah. lifestyle, right?
Yeah. It was very hard. So, I mean, of course, you know, we're newly married and yeah, moved around a little bit. But he was gone a lot. I was alone a lot. That was yeah. a lot of our marriage was, you know, me alone and trusting the process, TTP on that. Like, you know, him, you know, pursuing his career and hopefully it will turn around and make yeah. the best of it. But
he's building a life for you yeah. and you're trusting that. You're sacrificing now, but it's going to pay off.
Right.
A lot of trust.
So years go by and yeah, there's chaos often, but like, I guess I could tolerate it. I don't know. But,
were there good times?
There were good times too. Yeah.
Yeah.
We did have fun. We lived at the beach for a while and that was really fun. And, but you know, we're now growing and we're getting older and then we eventually wanted to start a family. And you know, I kind of thought we're all going to go on this path together, you know? So, end up having Ford and yeah, there is an incident that kind of shifted everything for me. And it's a story that I'm not going to really tell the details to, cause I want to honor and respect
yeah.
you know, the boy's dad. But, there was a moment where he was in trouble and he put me in a position to come to his aid at the risk of our 4-month-old baby.
Yeah.
And,
I know the details of the story, which obviously we're yeah. not going to share, but you had to make a choice.
I had to make the choice.
I had to make a choice of I do what he's asking me to do to take care of him, but to do that was going to put the baby at risk.
Yeah.
And
I made the wrong decision.
Yeah.
And I went and helped him. And I woke up the next morning 2 hours later because it was
in the middle
late.
Of the night.
Yeah. But, and I was so tired. I mean, just taking care of this young baby. But I could not settle with what I did and helped with that night before. And so I couldn't tell my parents. I wasn't ready to tell them these things yet.
Yeah.
But I did have a mentor and I called her and she came over and immediately and sat with me on the couch and I just sobbed and I just told her everything that happened. And, that was the first moment where she looked at me and said, Lacey, this is not normal and that's not healthy and that's not good and yeah. something's off, you know. And I had no clue. I mean, yeah. there was just lots I didn't know, you know.
Yeah.
And
sometimes when you're in the thick of the chaos, it's hard to see the forest from the trees. Like
yeah.
your normal is normal, even yeah. if it's chaotic, wild.
Yeah.
But to you, it's normal. So you're so calloused to it.
That I think I assume a lot of young girls, I'm not the only one that's like, you're in a marriage and you're at home and you're like, is this normal? Like, yeah. does this happen to you? Or does it, you know, you just don't know.
Yeah.
And so you'd rather
then the stuff that you question, you feel guilty telling someone, mm-hmm. you feel like you're uncovering because you want to be gracious to your spouse and you don't want to uncover them. And maybe you're a little bit embarrassed, but you're also like, I don't want to expose what this is, like abnormal behavior. And
Right. I mean, I remember meeting with two of my closest friends too. And for the first time admitting, you know, what happened. And it was like, they should have known all these things years down the road, but I couldn't go there.
Yeah.
So it was really hard, really humbling.
So what year was that? That was fall of
2012. January of 2012.
So at this point, how many years had you been married?
We got married in 2006.
Okay. So I'm a timeline person. I always have to keep things on a linear
6 years of like, you know, marriage or whatever, or just newlyweds or whatever.
Yeah.
Building his business. And so.
Yeah. And it was kind of up and down. Mm-hmm. But that was the first. So it was 6 years in, fall 2012, major red flags. And then it wasn't maybe a year after that that you ended up separating, right?
I think it was actually about 2 years because then I had Raider.
No, you're right.
Yeah. So at this point I had, a two-year-old and then a four-month-old baby. Yeah. And
so you're in the thick of babies.
Yeah.
So hard.
I mean, I was just drowning. I changed every diaper. I did, you know, everything just because he was working all the time. Hard. And I wanted to support his work. I was like, I got the babies, you do that. But it was a lot.
But you're in that season of he's working really hard.
Yeah.
But you're still really poor.
Yeah.
And you've got
we were very small
babies. And so I was there too. hard.
It was really hard.
So 2 years later, you decide to separate.
Things kind of kept happening. It was like an every 3 month kind of a 2 month cycle and or something. And after that incident, the first incident, I think eventually my parents kind of were aware and I was able to talk about it, which was just nice. And then I was going to therapy and I was getting counseling and he was too. And we would try to go to couples counseling. And so there were definitely lots of work and effort and, you know, being put in those 2 years.
Yeah.
But I don't remember what it was, but it was, Raider was 4 months old and I was in bed, 9 o'clock at night, just sobbing, just alone, so tired. And I don't remember what happened. I'm sure there was something, but all I know is that my mom called at 9 o'clock at night, which is rare, but I picked up and she said, it's time to come home. And I just sobbed. I was like, how did she know? She just knew. That's what I needed.
Yeah.
Because I was too embarrassed to ask them if I could, but I didn't know where to go. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
No one else had gone through it.
Her mama instinct.
Gut
she just said, I'm calling her.
Yeah.
I just know that I know it's time for her to come home.
And so, the next morning I was already planning on going to the beach with my small group and that mentor. So I was packing the car and as I loaded up, when I left, I just said, hey, you know, when I come back, I'm not moving in. I'm going to go to mom, dad's for a while, you know, until things get better, which I didn't really know what that looked like, but all I knew is it was time.
So let's, we can be kind of funny for a second. Let's talk about moving in with your parents in your 30s or in your 20s. This is 2013, right?
Yeah.
So you're 29.
20, yeah. Late 20s.
So what's crazy is Lacey and I both moved in with our parents.
In 2013. Which is so weird.
Just super wild. We both separated at the same time. Didn't know each other. I had no clue that you existed.
Yeah, I didn't know you.
But we're both living, we went through Snowmageddon.
Snowmageddon.
With our parents at the house, at our parents' houses. So, I know for me, it was like sleeping in my high school bedroom. Literally the pictures my high school girlfriend had like put up on like a pushpin board up on the wall. you know, it's still up there. And I'm thinking, like, this is humiliating. Yeah. I'm a grown man. I own a home. I have cars.
It was. You know? Yeah, speaking of humiliation, I mean, I was so embarrassed to have, I guess, I don't know why, I think I drove a minivan, whatever. My car parked outside their house for so long. I just remember the whole community knows. I thought everybody was looking and knowing. Yeah. I'm sure they were not at all. But like,
yeah,
it was just the most embarrassing thing for me to be living with my parents, yeah, with these two kids, because I didn't know anybody that had ever done that before. I mean, I didn't know that was normal. I didn't know you could separate like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Until I was, you know, had mentors.
Yeah.
Say, this might be something you should do, you know. So that was very, very hard. But yeah, I mean, living with my parents, in a way, it was, I needed it so bad because I just needed to get out of the bubble of my current home. And I loved being around, you know, growing up. I did grow up in a very sweet family. My parents, in my opinion, were perfect.
Yeah.
You know, and, but it was so healthy for me to observe their marriage, their laughs, they're also, you know, arguments or disagreements and how they handled it. Yeah. And I just was like observing and also breastfeeding and taking care of these babies. And, you know,
what yeah, you say, like, they would have a Bible study come over and you'd take the kids upstairs to try to keep them quiet.
I did not want to be an inconvenience at all, because it was such a gift for me to be able to go there. I'd always try to like cook dinner when I could, and you know, it's like cleaned out their pantry.
Just earn your keep.
Earn my keep.
Well, so obviously you went back because Rock exists, yeah, right? So Rock didn't exist at the moment.
Yeah.
Raider's a baby. He's our middle boy. Ford's the oldest. You had Ford, baby Raider. And so was there like a moment, a revelation where you're like, okay, this is the time to move back in? Like, how did you make that decision?
There truly, honestly, was not. I was hoping and praying there would be some aha moment, but I lived there for 5 months, and I just was like, I don't know if anything's going to be different unless I move back. You know,
you knew you had to try again.
I just knew I had to try again, and I knew I couldn't live there for forever. Yeah. You know,
and we were kind of raised like divorce isn't an option, right? Like divorce. You know, like, I literally remember at my rehearsal dinner, you know, it was actually my ex-wife's grandmother got up and she said, we don't use divorce in this family. No one has ever gotten divorced in however many
umpteen
generations. Yeah. And like, lo and behold, we were the ones that broke the cycle. But we were raised in that culture of like, just divorce isn't an option. So just to even wrap your brain around accepting that is really, really, it's a huge paradigm shift that's very difficult, I think, for a lot of people to get there.
And while I was living there, I mean, I was, again, going to lots of the different meetings to get help, you know, and counseling sessions. And I also went back to my art studio.
Yes. No, thank you. Tell me about that. That's right. While you were living with your parents, that was a huge thing.
Yeah, it really was. My parents, in the basement of their house, my dad had set up like a whole art table for me when I was young. And, you know, I had the babies and I'd go on walks with friends, and I had just had multiple friends be like, Lacey, you should start painting again. Cause again, we were just like broke. We just had no money. And I was like, oh, you know, I don't know. But anyways, I ended up going down to the basement and picked up my favorite medium, which is pen and ink and watercolor. I loved that in high school. And just kind of, I got started with baby animals, you know, trying to sell. I was in that phase of life, so that made sense to me. So I did these like black and white pen and ink sketches of, you know, baby giraffe or hippo or whatever. And started to sell those little things. So then when I moved back in April, I think it was like the Easter Sunday. I was like, new beginnings. Here we go. Let's try this again.
Oh,
so
babe.
Moved back in and I just started. Instagram became a thing.
That was new. Yeah, selling stuff on Instagram was really, really new.
It used to be just like a photography type
app. I remember.
Picture.
It's like photo editing.
All of a sudden it was more of personal life or selling something or whatever. And so moved back in with my little paper and my pen and ink, and I worked in the kitchen at this house and just started to dabble in that. And then got into a local store in Birmingham that was an English village. And the owner of that store really helped me and encouraged me. And
kind of mentored you.
She mentored me, kind of ushering me into like how to make money as an artist and would help me price things. And, you know, I didn't know what I was doing and just doing this all in my spare time or late at night after I get the kids to bed. So, but it ultimately, it started to grow.
So how are things in the marriage? So let's go back. You've moved back in. You're trying to reconcile the relationship. At the same time, you've got this small, very small, kind of meager beginnings of an art mm-hmm. business, but that's giving you something to do.
It gave me something to do, and it brought a little bit of money in. It kind of gave me a little
some
relief.
Independence, yeah.
And I think that was helpful. And yeah, I guess.
So how was the relationship going?
I think it was good.
Yeah.
It was kind of a blur, but I'm trying to remember. But I mean, we'd have our moments that was good. And then there, you know, there were still some hard, but ultimately I think we were both trying again,
yeah.
You know, and both going to counseling and, we were putting efforts in for sure. He was still getting his business off and gone a lot, but I think having my own little sidekick was a good thing.
Yeah.
And still being a state prison mom.
Yeah.
Which I really wanted to be.
So in 2015, that's when your business really started kind of getting some momentum, right?
Mm-hmm.
So talk about that.
Well, so yeah,
What were you painting?
Yeah.
What caught on? Like what created the momentum?
So the more I got into the art as like a business and trying to make money on it. I do have a little bit of a business mind.
Baby, you have an amazing, y'all, Lacey is a unique creative because she is 100% a right brain creative. When you hear us communicate, you can realize I'm very left brain. She's very right brain because sometimes we totally miss each other.
Yeah.
However, but she's unique in the fact you have a brilliant business mind. You're very strategic. You want to, you read your P&L once a month at least. You want to know how you're doing compared to last year. You're trying to figure out where you're losing money. Anyway, you have a brilliant business mind, so don't downplay that.
So it all started with thinking, what can I do to help grow my business, you know? And there were other artists kind of coming along, and everyone was doing, and everyone was painting on canvas and framing things on canvas, which I love painting on canvas too, but... And I would attempt that, but I just felt like it didn't resonate with me.
Yeah.
And so I just had a moment with the Lord at one point. And I was like, okay, I've got to do something different. And especially if I'm going to want to make money on this.
You want to differentiate yourself from what everyone else out there is doing.
I want to do something different and be more original than the other people. And no one that I saw was doing like pen and ink and watercolor stuff. And I just so happened to absolutely love
working with that medium.
So it was
medium,
like, okay, like... Come on, Lacey, that's exactly what you should do. You know?
Yeah.
So I did. I remember picking up the pen and ink and watercolor again and in my kitchen at home, but moved back home on the kitchen floor. And I just prayerfully was like, okay, God, let's do something here. And did these two strokes. And oddly enough, it looked like a feather to me and didn't think anything of it besides like, oh, that'd be kind of cool to do a bunch of those and make them into a group. And posted it on Instagram the next day. And I also wanted to make sure they were very watercolors, very quick.
Yep.
So you can dry as quick. I can pick it up quick.
As a mom, you can't sit there and work on one piece of art for 2 weeks.
No.
You need to be in and out. It's also your personality too.
Acrylic. Oh, it is. Totally.
I always joke there's no dust on Lacey.
Yeah.
Because she never stops moving. She's just very efficient. Get it done. Get in, get out. Yeah, you know.
Very true. And the watercolor brushes don't ever get stiff from the acrylic.
Yep.
So just the cleanup was easy. It dried
fast. So practical.
Very practical. And I did only monotoned colors. It was sepia, gray, you know, black, gold. You know, it was just very neutral colors. And I just would paint.
Posted your first set on Instagram.
I posted my first
set. They sold.
They sold immediately.
Immediately.
And
for how much a piece?
Oh, probably like $10.
$10 a piece.
$12, you know.
And you're thinking, yes, I just made $50. Like, I made $48.
And she had the same vision. The girl who bought it was like, I'm going to do, you know, group in my husband's office. And I was like, yes, this is it.
She got your vision.
And I guess I posted it just kept on selling. I just kept on posting them. And I would group them in six or four or two.
And you can go back to your Instagram page, right? Go back to the early years and you can see these posts of the early feathers.
The OG feathers. They're very different than what I do now. Yeah. But also, I like actually love them. But so, yeah, I would just group them and people would just buy them off the, just immediately. They didn't have to pick or choose. They just trusted what I put together. So they were just, they started to sell. And that was, what year are we in now? That was fall 2015. Fall of 2014, started 2015. I started my LLC.
Okay.
So it was like, okay, I think I'm making some money now, you know? And so,
so you're officially in business by Lacey LLC. Yeah.
Came up with a little name.
Yeah. And, logo, all that good stuff.
Made it official. And so then, I really started that whole year painting and other things would come out. I'd still kind of paint on canvas some, but the year continued to progress to where the feathers just kept getting more in high demand and it just blew my socks off. And so that I would.
And didn't you say like feathers were a thing too that year?
So that, okay, by the end of 2015, I remember the Anthropology catalog.
Yeah.
Which I think those creatives are just super prophetic.
They're prophetic. Yeah.
I mean, I'm telling you, after
you're
that,
hearing
I was
feathers,
like,
seeing feathers, they're hearing feathers, seeing feathers.
So yeah, like December 1st, 2015, you know, it's all these feathers like on the Anthropology catalog and it's like birds of a feather or something.
Yeah,
and I was like, feathers are so in, you know, and I've been painting them for a year. So that was really fun to see. And I was staying up till midnight painting probably, I don't know, 30 feathers a night. I don't know. It was a lot.
Yeah. So the floor would be covered. And again, so guys, you got to understand watercolor, it's water. So it drips and moves.
Yeah.
So you can't paint it on an easel. It has to be flat on the ground. So imagine this kind of janky old school hard floor kitchen and you have just watercolor papers.
I go to bed and there'd just be feathers.
Every
square
of the floor
all
is covered with feathers drying.
And then before the babies woke up in the morning, I'd just pick them all up and put them on the counter.
And as fast as you could paint them, they would sell.
Yes.
And then you would do, she was like a drug dealer. Right, that's how you ordered it before. But she would load up the trunk of her minivan with these feathers and pull up in a parking lot and these, housewives would come shop out of her trunk, you know. Need a dime bag. I mean, a couple of matching feathers
like, this
here.
Looks really sketchy.
So she would light them up and they would figure out what sets they wanted to create. And
It was bizarre. It was just out of my.
So by the fall of 2015, correct me if I'm wrong, you had significant momentum that kind of culminated in December of that year.
Yeah. And it hit me that December, it finally like.
Well, hang on. I want to know how much money did you make in December, not the rest of the year, just in December of that year, how much money did you make selling feathers?
Well, so yeah, let me get back to it. So that December, I think I would, when I was late at night like that, I remembered I knew I was making money. Painting feathers. I knew I was making money, but I didn't even have time to balance my books or see how much I was making. But it hit me all of a sudden then that with the Lord, I was like, I've been saying thank you every time I looked at a feather for the past 10 years.
Yep.
And here I am now just floating on them in my kitchen. And you're literally, this is my provision. So it's like, I've been saying thank you for all these years. And now that December, I made $50,000 in 1 month selling feathers. And that's not even including the October and the November that kind of built up to that,
right?
You know, getting ready for the holidays. But that 1 month, and I didn't even know that was a lot. I didn't know.
Yeah, because this is a lot of money.
I didn't know.
It's like, baby, that's like a teacher's salary.
I know. You know? I just was like, I'm grateful. I'm so, so, but I didn't know. I didn't understand that part of the money, like how much to live on.
Tell about when you took it to an accountant, like your books to an accountant to get ready for taxes.
Yeah. And I was like, here, and he goes, well, what do you do now? And I was like, well, I paint these feathers. Because at the time, it ended up being like all I did every day. And I was like, I paint these feathers. And he was like, feathers?
Feathers.
And I was like, yes, sir. And he's like, feathers.
Feathers.
like,
he's trying to figure out what in the world.
I think he was like, do you actually paint a feather? And they're like, no. It's like watercolor feathers. But, you know,
it's a lot of feathers.
My yearly, whatever, P&L.
And y'all have to realize, too, because she's still painting these. God bless these feathers. They still put food on the table for this family. But they sell for a lot more than they're selling. Yeah. So
I mean,
$50,000 worth of those feathers back then, it's a lot of feathers. So yeah. Mama was up really late at night painting feathers. And then you got toddlers in the house. So I imagine the next morning before the toddlers are up, you got to gather all this up and put it somewhere safe so they don't get ruined. I can't imagine the hustle.
And I was shipping them out of my house. I had these, ordered these like a ton, 100 manila envelopes and these clear bags. And I'd just ship them all from my house, print them and the shipping label. And
yeah.
So.
Okay. So that was December of 2015. Let's move into 2016.
Okay.
And this is actually when I entered the picture, which is kind of funny. Mm-hmm. So not in a romantic light, but this is the first time we meet. So talk about kind of that process. What led up to that? Wanted to renovate your house, basically. Yes. You had a plan to renovate your house.
In like a 1960s house.
Shag carpet, literally original appliances.
The OG of the OGs. And I was okay with it.
Brick wallpaper in the kitchen.
I can see potential, you know,
But you got to deal with the century of the house.
You got to deal with it for a hot minute. And I did, we did a little halfway, you know, at the very beginning. And then all I wanted was, I love to cook and I just wanted a good kitchen. And this kitchen that we were in was just not
cutting it.
Mm-mm. And so finally we were ready to do that and so excited. So yeah, we got a contractor and, we're ready to go, but it was just not quite in our budget. My ex, I didn't know this, but taxes were not paid the year before. And so a chunk of the money that I had for the kitchen that I was so excited about getting had to go towards the taxes from the previous year.
So now your budget got really tight.
My budget got very small. Yeah. And so he told me to go get like 10 other contractors and quotes and stuff. So I did. And you were one of them.
Yeah.
Because I knew your sister. Your sister and I ran together 3 years. We're running at that time together, I guess. And you were in construction at the
time.
She
said, give my brother a call.
Yeah. And so I got a number from her, your number from her. But anyways, narrowed it down to three. You were the lowest bid. I've also seen your work at other friends' houses. You're Shan's brother. It just was an easy.
So we did really high quality work for a very low price, which is why I'm no longer a contractor. Because a good business mind would say that's unsustainable. And indeed it was unsustainable. So that's another story.
Yeah.
But anyway, so you selected me.
Yeah. So I wasn't as your contractor. Had to leave that, unfortunately, whatever, but then it all worked out, found you. And I also was pregnant at the time. So I guess I was probably like 16 weeks pregnant, very early, but I was on the time clock. Yeah. So I was like, we need to get this going, you know? And,
so you're pregnant, start renovating the house. Now at the same time, I feel like when you've told the story in the past, it's like you and your ex were kind of started living very independent lives.
Yeah.
Right. You're managing the renovation alone. Doing a great job of that. You're chasing kids around. Your art business is booming.
Yeah, my business is growing for sure. And I'm also internally growing a lot. Behind the scenes, there was still like the chaos was still, that was always kind of an underlying thing. And there's just lots of different stories with that I won't get into, but things were still, it kind of got hard again. Yes, I got pregnant, but I knew I wasn't done with babies.
Your lives weren't that separate, babe.
They weren't.
You made a baby.
I know. It's like you kind of think a baby's going to help make, or building a family will help things. Maybe that was like my subconscious.
So subconsciously, tell me if this is wrong. So subconsciously you're thinking, well, if we have another baby, maybe it'll help him settle down.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll help him focus. Yeah. Maybe it'll kind of solidify us as a family unit.
Yeah.
And
I just deeply knew. I was like, I'm not done with babies.
You're not done.
Anyway, so Rock, I was pregnant with Rock.
And Lord knows we needed Rock. Mm-hmm. He is the delight of our home.
Yeah.
Might love that kid.
Yeah.
So thank God you had another baby with him.
Yeah.
Because we love Rock.
So I'm trying to think. Yeah. So 2016, got pregnant with Rock. Start the kitchen renovation.
So you're pregnant.
Met you.
Renovating. We met. Honestly, I never saw you again, maybe once, because I put a project manager on this job.
Mm-hmm.
And then but at some point you're already like thinking about filing for divorce. Okay. Like when did that happen? Cause this is the same year you filed for divorce. Yeah.
There were just things going on and I don't even remember all of it, but I just knew, yeah, it just got to the point where even my parents, we were meeting and I knew I was ready. It was time. I was like, I can't live like this anymore.
Yeah.
And, okay. And the way I was living, I think this is what you were trying to get to is I just internally decided like to not say anything. I'm not going to nag about anything. I'm not going to
complain
anything. I'm not going to suggest this or suggest that or ask this, or I'm just going to take care of me, take care of the boys. I'm going to personally finish, you know, this kitchen project alone and just kind of make all the decisions because it was just too complicated to get asked or whatever. So, and it needed to get done because we had this baby on the way. So I just kind of started living. I just decided internally just to kind of like live my own life and just watch how the other side kind of pans out. And
you're like, I'm going to stop trying to control this.
I'm going
to stop. Is that fair for me to say?
I'm
going to stop trying to control our relationship and his path.
Yeah. And I want to see his choices towards the family.
Yep. Without my influence.
Without my influence. Like, what does that look like? So that was going on for a couple months. And I was to the point, I mean, we were living in the same house, but we're not, I mean, I would not call it a marriage at all. And there was really no interaction, different hours of the day. Like, you know, I never saw him. So, but then the week before I filed, he complimented me and he said, thank you. You've been so good, you know, helping me with this restaurant. And you've been such a good wife and I just feel so blessed and thank you. And you're just so wonderful. And this is so great. And our marriage is so great. And this is, thank you.
So you realize that for him, no relationship was
the
excellent.
Best,
that was you being an excellent wife.
Mm-hmm. And that was my final confirmation. I was always praying for confirmation because this was not a light decision.
No.
I didn't know anyone had made a decision to go through
divorce. Let's just clarify here. In the middle of a renovation, 7 months pregnant, trying to run your own business, chasing two other toddlers around, you make the decision to leave.
It was the hardest season of my entire life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was just like one day at a time.
And then to add insult to injury, your contractor calls you and says, hey, my business partner have kind of figured out this is not working and we're trying to figure out how to shut down the business, which winding down a construction company
like
is
6 weeks before Rob's
is
due.
Not 6 weeks before the baby's due. And my partner and I split up our customers to make the phone calls. And I made a phone call to you and I said, hey, look, we can finish your project. But subs were getting nervous. It was just a really complicated, honestly, a messy situation. And I called, that was one of the hardest phone calls I've ever had to make was to you to tell you that and to try to figure out how we'd figure it out together. And so now it's my contractor is shutting down his business.
Yeah.
He says he's going to finish my job. I'm 7 months pregnant. I'm trying to maintain my own business.
So I needed help. I knew I needed help maintaining my own business. So prior to filing, you know, we had discussed getting an au pair.
Right.
I was like, I cannot take care of three kids and work like I'm working and bringing home.
So for those listening that don't know or watching, an au pair it's almost like an exchange student program where a student from another country comes and lives with you. They're taking classes at a local university.
Yep.
But they also work for you and help.
Someone recommended it because I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know how I'm going to do this to take care of these boys. Like, he was never home ever. So they said, look up an au pair. And I did. And the process works where you kind of make your own little profile, if you will. It's like a dating app almost.
Yeah.
And I look at these girls and a lot of them were from Brazil. They're all over, but there's a lot of Brazilian girls. And, interviewed about three girls and then landed with Talita. And so once you commit to the girl, they fly them out 30 days later. So it's like a really quick turnaround. Again, I'm 7 months pregnant, you know, and she didn't know. I think that all happened prior to me filing for divorce. But anyways, so yeah, I filed for divorce in September. Talita moves in with me October, and Rock is born in November.
Unbelievable. I want you to talk about, giving birth to Rock.
That was
wonderful. After all, in the midst of all that, finish what you're going to say. I'm sorry.
I'm surprised I'm not crying, but yeah, that was one of the hardest days of my life. I just watched that movie, It Ends With Us, last week. I'm very late in the game, but I just sobbed watching that movie. That's because at the very end of the movie, she ends up, she's pregnant, and she's also now filing for divorce from her abusive husband. And, but she's putting the crib together and getting, you know, the nursery ready, and like the scene where she's like birthing the baby and he's there. I mean, I went through all that, you know, it's like, I knew the decision was right for me, but like, it's still your baby too, you know? And like, you know, you need to be here in the room.
Yeah.
So I remember Rock's birthday, like the first year was so hard because it was such a, it's like such a wonderful, happy day. And he's like, what do we say? Enthusiasm personified.
He's
just such a joy. But like that day was really hard because it's just such a mix of emotions. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So thank you for sharing that. So you bring Rock home and it's you, this random like, Brazilian girl, two like, toddlers. You've got a minivan and a mortgage and a business to run, and it's all on you.
Yeah.
It's all
we're starting all
riding
that, all
on
that divorce
you.
Stuff, figuring out, you know, that was the beginning of figuring out how to figure
yeah.
all the legal stuff. And yeah, it was all on me. Yeah. I thought it was going to go for like 3 months. We were going to be done, but no, it went on for like a whole year to navigate all that stuff, legal stuff. But that was really hard too.
Yeah.
Cause you know, Rock was an infant and I had to figure out, when he could see his dad and when he couldn't see his dad and what that looked like. And
yeah, putting that to complicated decree to put together.
And, you know, of course I feel guilty in some points that I made this decision, but I also knew that it was right.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Mm. Like, when you make that kind of a decision, it's not just, hey, I'm doing what's best for me. It's like, I'm doing what's best for my boys, but I also recognize that my boys are going to have a lot of pain as a result of this decision.
Yeah.
And so being able to embrace that, embrace the consequences, weighing the pros and the cons, realizing I think the pros long-term are going to be better for everyone. But that is such a hard call to make.
Yeah.
Such a hard call, especially as a mother who just feels that responsibility to nurture and take care of her boys.
Yeah. It's so hard.
So we'll close with this. So you're entering into 2017 and you've got this random Brazilian girl who's now like family, Talita.
She was such an angel for me.
Is living in your house. Yeah. But it was kind of like having a teenager, you said.
Yeah, she was, you know, a lot younger. And
you had to teach her how to drive.
And
the minivan kind of had some signs of that.
Only one, I think. She did pretty good.
Yeah. But Tina, Brenda. I'm sorry. We named our car. So Brenda, the minivan, you know, had some wear and tear in her about when all was said and done.
But Talita became so much a part of our family.
So you got a young Brazilian girl that you're mentoring, who's also helping you take care of baby Rock. You've got a thriving business, but you also have to keep up with.
Yeah.
You don't have a guaranteed paycheck. It's not like you have a salary job. Mm-hmm. So if you don't work, don't eat. Mm-hmm. You don't work. If you don't sell something, the mortgage doesn't get paid.
You have to be very proactive, which can be so exhausting. You know, sometimes it's nice to just get that every 2 week check, but you gotta always find something new to.
So what did you learn before we close? What did you learn spiritually, like about how God took care of you during that season? That season, like new beginnings.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say provision.
Yeah.
Is like such a vaulted truth for me. I mean, being pregnant with all that chaos, the construction and Toledo and just the babies. I mean, there was afternoons where I was like, I'm so tired, but I felt like I couldn't take a nap or I couldn't rest. I felt like there's no room to rest because there's still so much to do, you know?
Yeah.
But then I would go in my bed and be like, okay, God, I just need to shut my eyes for a second. And when I did, I would wake up on my phone, I'd have like an online order that like took care of those more than I could have done in that hour.
Yeah.
And those little bitty micro moments where I like almost felt guilty, but looked to him and in literal rest of just like, I can't do it all, you know?
Yeah.
He filled the gaps. So I just watched him provide for me, for Toledo, for the kids.
That's beautiful, babe. Well, thank you. We're going to take a break.
Okay.
And we're going to come back with part two.
Part two. Sounds good.